Hello, everyone. It's your favorite winos, Dylan.
And Jordan.
And welcome back to this really awesome episode. We cannot wait for you guys to just uncork with us. This episode, we are actually having some special guests.
Yes, we are in our... What episode is this, Dylan? I don't even know. We are chugging right along.
Oh, I love chugging.
To this choo-choo. New episode to choo-choo. And we are in our Four Whistles Winery. And it's a special episode because we are having guests on this show.
Yay!
We are having Samuel, and he is the winemaker and the viticulturist.
Yes.
Such a fun word to say.
Viticulturist.
So, on the show. But let us introduce you Jane and Phil Daly, who are the founders of Four Whistles. Before we jump right in, are we good with that?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, Phil Daly, he is the founder and CEO and occasional cellar rat. He has been a wine enthusiast for many years. After growing up in the Palouse country of Washington State, he went and graduated from WSU with a marketing degree. He then spent 30 years working for and then retiring from the federal government. When the opportunity to invest and be part of the industry presented itself in 2014, he could not resist. Along with his wife, Jane, she is the founder and production manager and vine manicurist. Jane has passion for perfection and craft, lending her skills to managing operation in the cellar and vineyards. After many years of working for the federal government, Jane wanted to do something that she felt more passionate about. When she pitched her husband Phil the idea about starting a winery, and it was immediately loved, and Four Whistles was born soon after.
And then, of course, Samuel, the winemaker and viticulturist, is the son of the founders, Jane and Phil. Samuel wanted to get his hands dirty in the industry that was equal parts science and art, which who wouldn't want to do that?
Yeah.
Botany and chemistry. Winemaking requires all of these skills, and when the opportunity to attend WSU and its Burgundy wine program came along, he jumped right into the growing industry. Samuel graduated from WSU in viticulture and enology in 2018, bringing all of his education, vital skills, and experiences to Four Whistles. And can we tell you how incredible this wine is?
Yes, I'm so excited to jump in and just start along this, you know, I was going to do another.
This railroad?
I was going to do another wine train pun, but I'll stop. I just can't wait to jump in, really, and get to know the Daly family.
Yes.
And also just to share this wine along with you. So we are excited to jump into this episode.
Yeah, we're super excited. Stay tuned.
To thank you so much for hopping on to this Zoom, and we are just so excited to jump into Four Whistles, as I said earlier in the beginning of our intro. So just some quick questions, really, just to get to know you guys. Is can you just tell us a little bit about yourself and your story and how the winery got started?
Yeah, for sure. So as of right now, the kind of the core team of Four Whistles is just myself, and then my mother and father, who are the business owners. So it's kind of a family business venture that we decided to start officially on the books in 2019.
Okay.
It's been a whole process up until that. You know, there's been a lot of kind of behind the scenes stuff that had to happen in order for us to, you know, be a full-fledged business when we wanted to open our doors in 2019.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess kind of going broad strokes, mom and dad bought a chunk of property in Eltopia, Washington in 2014, when I had began my education at Washington State University.
Yeah.
So my freshman year began 2014. Mom and dad decided subsequently that year to purchase property out here. They had both previously been employed on the East Coast. That's where I went to high school as well. So when I got enrolled at WSU. They decided that they were kind of done with the East Coast and the hustle and bustle and everything that came with that whole thing. So then, yeah, they decided to, they were going to start looking for properties and jobs, I guess, too, at that point. They were still working for the federal government. So they both started looking for careers out here as well. Dad got a job working for Department of Energy out at Hanford for a while.
Okay.
And then he retired from there. So,
okay. Oh, wow.
And then mom got a job working for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife in Finley.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that's where she retired from as well. They both retired in, I want to say 2017.
Okay.
Totally.
If not 2017, right around there, either 2016 or 2018. So, but yeah, so then I graduated from college at WSU in 2018. So in kind of in between there, we were just kind of trying to grow the winery, like basically just trying to figure out if this is something that we could do.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sure. my degree being viticulture and enology, I didn't anticipate them necessarily wanting to be part of the wine industry when I got into that. Because it kind of just started out as like I was taking classes and, you know, mm-hmm. learning about soil sampling. And it was just kind of like, well, I know you've got, you know, a chunk of land. Can I do some soil sampling? Right. Like just started doing stuff like that. Right. And just kind of trying to learn hands on.
Yeah.
While I was getting an agriculture degree.
That's cool. Okay.
And so when you're
doing. Yeah. Super cool. Very fortunate. Very fortunate.
That's awesome.
Right. So when you're doing the soil sampling, is that how you're determining what type of, I guess, crops or grapes to really grow in that region?
Well, you can certainly use soil sampling as you know, to inform a preliminary decision like that. But at that point, when we were doing soil sampling, they had already planted some grapes in the back.
So, okay.
We knew that they were going to want to, it's going to be whether, you know, what we had to do to make that happen.
Okay.
So soil sampling became part of that suite. Like, well, we know that the soil is going to be deficient in certain areas, so we got to figure out where. And so we just did kind of a random sampling. We tried to hit kind of a broad section of our property, and then just to try to make sure that they weren't totally wacky and all, you know, different, like why that would be.
Yeah.
But no, they weren't. The topsoil all tested out pretty much the same content wise. So that was all good, but. What's kind of cool about the site that we learned with that soil sampling is that our topsoil goes from literally zero. So we have bedrock at the highest elevation of our site.
Uh-huh.
And then it goes all the way down to, we lose about, I don't know, maybe 30, 40 feet of elevation across the property.
Oh, wow.
And then at the very bottom of that, it's the topsoil goes on for like, I don't know, 15 feet.
Oh, geez. Wow.
So, yeah, there's a huge range in soil deposition across the site, which is cool because then I can, you know, play with that as a winemaker and grape grower.
That would be so fun. I mean, I love the science back. Like, I love science. So just all of that stuff, I'm sure is, I mean, and how you're getting started. That's just, I love that. That's your background, but also now you're putting it to what you're doing and your business. And I just think I love that stuff. So
it's fascinating.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been quite a journey. Definitely. I mean, we can go into more detail as we talk about things, but yeah,
absolutely.
That's pretty much the broad strokes is, you know, I knew I wanted to go to WSU.
Yeah.
Right.
And so then it became like, okay, well, what am I going to do? And narrowing that process down and like figuring out, cause initially I started out as a business major and then I switched majors halfway through. So that was kind of a part of that journey too.
Rough.
So, you know,
switching that through.
Yeah.
Oh, I've done that before. So
in the process of that.
Well, luckily I only had to do one extra semester.
Oh, so that's good. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Some people have to do that just getting their normal undergrad.
That's
right,
true. Right? Yeah. And I'm sure all those prereq, that's good that you didn't have to do that much. Cause that sometimes is a hassle.
Yeah. And like, so I was kind of fortunate in that, like, I started out sort of adjacent to the wine industry. So I was like wine business management was my kind of focus or whatever.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah, so I was already like, that's kind of where I was like, when I switched, I knew what I wanted to switch to because I'd already taken some of those courses.
Got it. Okay, so not as bad. Okay, that's good. Yeah,
Right,
that's
right.
good.
Yeah, totally. And it wound up being fortunate as well because, being a small business owner, having taken accounting and statistics and some of that stuff was, super beneficial. So I don't feel like I wasted my time or anything.
That's
It's just,
good. Yeah. All those,
it
yeah, and
just,
all plays in and helps you. I mean, honestly.
yeah, it gives you the
Exactly,
things that you need
exactly.
for the day. Yeah.
Totally. Some of the context
Yep.
for the greater operations of business and stuff,
Right. No, absolutely. Now, for your philosophy or mission behind your winemaking approach, how do you take it, from where you were at to where you are now? Is there anything that's changed? Is there anything that's adapted?
No, I mean, kind of built built our business around the core philosophy of that we just want to kind of be honest. So what in the industry or both in my education and my professional experience in the industry is that there seems to be kind of a lot of like for better or worse lying going on. Of course there's many degrees of lying as you know, but there's just a lot of lying. Be kind of telling some fibs, telling fish stories, which everybody does, and that's fairly innocuous to actually like deceiving your consumers, there's that, there's and everything in between. And it just kind of makes my skin crawl a little bit because it's like the way we sell the product is, so much goes into it, and it kind of feels like you're cheapening not only the people who work so hard to make the product, but it feels like you're cheapening the experience that the consumer receives. So that's kind of, not to get too high up on the horse about
No, yeah,
it,
no, it's
but
good.
that's kind of what we wrap the business around is, it is an expensive product and it is a luxury good, and it is ultimately kind of, artistic or, this kind of in this kind of gray area. It's not a, piece of hardware or a nut or a bolt or something that kind of has defined terms, but there is a little bit of that, and we're just trying to run the business, right? I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is we just want to be able to make wine the next year. We're not trying to please shareholders. We're not trying to, buy third and fourth and fifth houses. We're not trying to buy yachts or luxury vehicles for ourselves. We just, trying to keep the lights on, trying to make wine, because that's what we love to do, is we love to make the wine. And so that's the kind of connection that we try to foster as well.
Well, and that was the connection I met, Phil, back when you guys were in the public market, and that's when I really was able to connect. And I would agree with you. I feel like your guys' stance is just family forward and very welcoming to that experience. To the point where I told Jordan, I was like, I cannot wait to introduce you to all these wonderful people because it was just, you get that philosophy and that mission. I definitely feel that within every time I step foot within your
And I
vicinity.
felt that just when we were in there and you came in, but those two little ones were my girls, and just, the shuffleboard and your mom, that was so fun. She taught them how to play, and
Yeah.
that was a great time. And so I just felt just a home away from home kind of,
Yeah, absolutely.
Wonderful. No, and that's exactly what we're trying to cultivate. Yeah, because we just, you're just trying to. Whenever you start a business, you kind of try to hit some broad principles, right? You want to try to set yourself apart from the other players in the industry and stuff. And that was something that we kind of noticed was a little lacking, is it just feels like there's so many people in between. Like you go into a winery, and again, like I'm not trying to moralize, not just speaking about what I've noticed, what we've observed when we tried to decide what we wanted to be core principles of a business, is we noticed that within a lot of these wineries is there's just so many people between when you walk in and you're tasting the wine to who is making the product, right? And that's just something that was just it just felt off. Like it just felt like it didn't feel like, as a consumer of a good that is, ultimately a luxury, like I mentioned previously, is it, you've got to sell them on something. And it just seemed like what you're selling them in on is all this presentation and all this pomp and all this circumstance and these fancy venues and stuff like that. But ultimately, the product underneath is not necessarily differentiated from any other product in the market.
Right.
Right.
And so, you know, including, like I mentioned, there's just so many levels in between you, the consumer, and the person making it. So if, you know, you want to go, okay, so there's a consumer, you know, you've got you, the consumer, and then there's like a tasting room staff, right? And then you, if there's tasting room staff, there's a tasting room manager, and sort of other administrative staff, manager, and the winemaker. And then usually the winemaker is not the only person making the product, right? So then there's usually another layer there on the back end.
Yeah.
And so you've got 3, 4, 5 people in between the consumer and the person who's ultimately making the product.
Yeah.
And so it just is like, I don't know. It just, that's something that seemed odd to me. Or seemed off with again, something that's so, such a luxury. And then at the same time, places that do that, having sticker prices of $85,
$95,
$105 a bottle. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then almost like, kind of cart before the horse. Yep. Just, I don't know, chicken and egg kind of thing. It's like, well, if I'm paying all this premium on this bottle to pay for this consumer experience that's ultimately hollow.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly.
Why am I doing this?
Kind of what it felt like. That's so good. That's true. Love that philosophy. Yeah, that's, love that.
It's really
cool. And not to say that we're the only one doing that. There's a lot of other examples of it and people that kind of jive with.
But
that,
it shows in your that, family, and we're just going in and, you know, it shows for sure.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we,
that's what we want.
Yeah. So Dylan and I have opened 2024, the Rosé. So can we, what are your, I'm trying to think.
Yeah. I guess tell us a little bit about it. What should our, I guess, listeners, or what should we be experiencing when we're having this? Is there anything notes wise, tasting, you know, what went into making this bottle? You know, is it something different, you know, with it being a rosé? How does that contribute?
Yeah. I'll just run through the spiel, I guess, on it.
Please.
Kind of the, I guess what you call the boilerplate stuff, but it's so it's 50%. You have the 24, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So 50% Dolcetto, 50% Cab Sauv. So the Cab Sauv grapes come off of a couple of miles up the road from us, off a vineyard called Recusant Vineyards. pardon me.
You're good.
Recusant Vineyards. We know him very well. He's a small grower. He's pretty primarily a cherry grower, but he has a couple acres of grapes, and he does an excellent job.
Okay.
His fruit is just absolutely immaculate, beautiful fruit. But anyway, so the Cab Sauv comes off of him, and basically this rosé is a blend of two rosés. We manufacture each separately; they're each their own batch. So the Cab Sauv goes direct to press whole cluster, so the whole cluster grapes get all juiced out.
Okay.
And then they go into a tank and they ferment just as that. Okay. So they pretty much come out colorless. Wow. Even though the grapes are red, the Cab Sauv grapes are red, but because they're juiced whole cluster and really quickly right away, and not run through a crusher, destemmer or anything in between, comes out pretty much colorless. So it ferments off at the end of it. You wouldn't be able to tell the difference between it and the Chardonnay. Almost.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty neat. So interesting. That you can get a wine so colorless from red grapes. And then the Dolcetto is made a little different. So it comes off of our estate. So just behind where we manufacture all the wines, and right behind our winery is our block of Dolcetto. And so it comes off and it gets crushed and destemmed. So all the stems get removed, the grapes get, most of them get a little bit. So those get put in a big bin, and then they sit for about 4.5 hours. And then from there they go into our press, the solids get off, and the juice gets sent to a fermentation tank, and it ferments. So it gets all the color, and it comes off pretty red. You almost wouldn't think it would be rosé when it was done.
Oh, cool.
By blending them together, we get that kind of really nice rosé blush color.
Wow, it's delicious.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful color. Yeah, this is, I remember, well, when we asked your mom, you know, pick the two, and the, she called you, and I think you're the one, yeah, get the rosé, is what he said, so, yeah, that, so.
It's pretty much the same last year.
Same as last
okay.
year.
Okay, okay.
So the vintage 23 is virtually, you know, the same blend as vintage 24.
Okay.
And that kind of became, as I guess I'll give you some more background on why that kind of blend is going on, but basically because we had some irresponsible neighbors, just in agriculture, things happen, and we had a neighbor that was a little bit irresponsible with some herbicide spraying.
Oh.
And yeah, and so we hit the sprays at the wrong time, and it kind of drifted over our vineyards at a really critical growth period.
Oh wow.
And so our Dolcetto block was kind of at about 30% harvest as what it should be for the last 3 years. So, you know, things like that, you have to deal with when you're farming. But yeah, that being said, so we had to supplement that fruit with some of our neighbor stuff, which again, like I said, I picked up a couple years prior in 2022. Okay. And I knew that it was super high quality. So I think in moving forward with our rosé plan, basically, so harvest 2025, we will have a 100% Cab Sauv rosé that will be that full colorless version that I talked about. That's kind of only half realized right now. Yeah, so it'll be Cab Sauv rosé, but it'll be, you know, just kind of a little maybe just a shade pinkish.
Oh, okay.
Just
a little bit. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's so.
And then we'll have an estate rosé that's also full color. And okay. The traditional and bright red that you would, or bright pink that you would expect to rose.
Okay.
Yeah, well, just so we have both, because, you know, I think both have their merits.
Yeah. Well, if it's anything like how good this one tastes, I'm all here for it. So that works with me.
Cool. Awesome. Excited. It's so interesting, you know, talking about the process and, how that grape, you know, colorless as you were talking about. I just find that stuff so interesting. I'd love to learn so much more from you. I can just literally hear you talking for hours about all the things. Yeah.
Me too, honestly. Like, it, yeah.
Well, and it's I'm, you know, again, I'm just going, I'm so fortunate to be able to have this estate and stuff. Like, so we've had the good fortune to, just through some other contacts through WSU, to be able to make what's called an orange wine, right? Which is a white wine that you give skin contact to. So a couple years back, we had the fortune of, we got to pick the vineyard that they use as the teaching vineyard at WSU Tri-Cities.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool. So we got some Gewürztraminer off of that. And so we let the Gewürztraminer ferment on its skins for four days. And so it just got this super, I don't know, it's just incredible orange blossom, luscious mouthfeel, like just really rich. But anyway, yeah, so it's kind of fun to be able to do stuff like that and kind of bring in some winemaking styles that people haven't heard and you know, kind of break the mold, I guess.
Right. Well, and I think if I'm correct, I think your mom actually gave us a little bit of a sample of an orange wine that you guys are releasing. Is that correct?
No, you had the orange muscat, which is just the name of the grape is orange muscat.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, so of course you can. Yeah, that's very reasonable confusion there. Yeah, because there are orange muscat. It's not necessarily an orange wine, so you can actually have an orange muscat. I mean, so. Interestingly enough, you have rosé of Syrah or
yeah,
right. That makes more
rosé
sense.
Of Sangiovese or whatever. So, yeah. So that's kind of it's pretty funny.
So, with, I guess, harvesting, what does a typical day look like for you and your team?
So, estate harvest and kind of we have some, you know, we have our estate fruit, and then we also purchase fruit on the market, so those days kind of look a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So when we harvest on our estate, it's a much bigger day for us, because we typically have to organize labor to do that harvest, whereas when we purchase fruit on the market, We just go pick it up. You know, we drop off bins at a vineyard, and they have their labor take care of that harvest for us, and then we just pick up full bins of grapes, which is great. You know, I mean, we pay for it, right? There's a premium on that, but that's nice. So the days don't start quite so early then, for us anyway. They start early for the harvesters, but like I said, so on the estate, it you know pretty much start at 6 a.m. You know, try to be rolling out in the vineyards. You know, try to have your cup of coffee in your hand at 5:30 and have your tools in your pocket and stuff and be out putting bins in the vineyards. And then we pretty much harvest one block at a time. So we have four blocks in our vineyard right now. We have a Dolcetto block, we have a Riesling block, we have a Malbec block, we have a Petit Verdot block, and then we have a mixed block. It's all kind of part of our estate, and so those will all kind of harvest off at different times, fortunately. But again, yeah, so we're going back to harvesting on one block. So the fruit will come in hopefully before 10 a.m. Want to try to get everything done by 10 a.m. It's not as mostly we want the fruit to be cold when we put it through the equipment. Just slows down.
Is there a reason for that?
It's kind of a task, right? You're losing if you were, you know, you're losing the battle at that point, right? You're aromatics, you're losing a lot of things. Your bad microorganisms, so things other than yeast, things that want to compete with yeast for that sugar, they're at a huge advantage. Because they were on the surface of all that grape, and now you've ground it all up and put them all in everything, and now they're coated in sugar, and they're in this awesome environment, and so the warmer that is, the faster you lose that battle. So it's all kind of a ticking time
That
bomb
makes
there.
sense. Yeah.
Between yeah, like I said, between the time that the basically between the time and that it comes off the vine and the time that you've got that fermentation going, whether that be a native ferment or whether that be a cultured yeast, but that entire time you want to try to keep the fruit as cold as possible. Yeah, so that's just because again you're just losing, you're at a disadvantage. And like yeah, your aromatics and stuff like that, especially with white wine, you want to make sure that comes off really cold, because that's you want to try to lock in all those aroma compounds and all the other biochemistry that's involved with the nice fruity floral white and rosé that you would expect. So yeah, you can kind of tell like a store-bought stuff kind of loses that because it's just been shipped all over the place, right? The fruit's been shipped across the state, or it's been shipped from here to there, or it's been juiced somewhere and then shipped to the different location, processed there, and then you know turned into wine there, and then taken out of the you know fermenter and then shipped to another place. So you know that entire time you're just losing all this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, that's interesting. I love that. Those
So
are
that's again part of our philosophy, trying to be estate, right? Like that's why estate matters to us, is because the grapes, you know, they come off the field and they don't spend any time on the back of a truck. They're not getting shaken around on a highway. They're coming right off the vineyard and going right into the crusher destemmer.
That's cool.
That's so
That's
cool. Yeah.
awesome. No, I'm loving hearing more about this. And so, yeah,
Yes.
just kind of going into, we talked a little bit about the process, your history, philosophy, all of that, but kind of maybe diving a little bit more wine specific. Which wine are you most, I guess, proud of, or is maybe your favorite, and why?
So which wine that we have bottled, or which wine that's, you know, in production?
Either or
Yeah, either
both.
or, or both.
Okay, so yeah, fair enough. Right now, the wine that I'm probably most proud of is that 2022 White Bluffs Cab Sauv. In bottle, that's starting to really come around. It's got some good life on it in bottle, and it's kind of put itself back together after being bottled and all stuff. And it's just kind of nice to one of the first wines that I was able to make in a way that I would say was all me,
mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because up until 2022, most of the wine that we have was either grown by somebody else or made in another facility, and mm-hmm. then we had to handle it or purchase it, you know, from ourselves, kind of thing. That kind of hung over my head for a number of years.
Yeah.
But with the 2022, that was off of a vineyard that I had actually interned at previously, so I knew that block of grapes. I'd worked with it before. I knew the owners, and also I was able to go out and chat with some of the vineyard foremen about, you know, questions like, hey, you know, how much do you really want out of this? Because we've left these five rows. These are your rows. You can get, you know, anywhere from a ton and a half to 2.5 tons off of it, depending on how we, you know, prune it and things like that. And so making those decisions with the vineyard foreman and things like that was very critical in, you know, having that wine come out the way that I wanted it to.
Mm, okay. That's awesome.
So that's kind of the first year that I really feel like that was all me, from the, you know, vineyard decisions to the winemaking decisions to the maturation decisions and everything. So.
Wow. That's incredible.
And then as far as things in production goes, I'm really, really excited about our 2024 reserve Red Mountain Merved. It's again, it's the same kind of thing where I feel like I wasn't put under duress, you know, making decisions based on budget and things like that.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, I'm just making this wine and this is how I want it to be. And that's how it's going to be, kind of thing.
So, oh, that's awesome. Right. Well, excited for you for that. That's great.
Yeah. And that's exciting.
Yeah.
Coming into that and super, super pumped to see just what you're going to do and you continue to do and be along here for the journey. I can't wait.
No, we can't.
You know, yeah, we're excited. I'm talking more about
that. Yeah, can you hang around until 2027?
Oh, yeah. Oh. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
We will continue this as long as people keep listening, and we love wine, so we'll be there regardless.
Yeah. You cool. got us hooked.
Well, that would be interesting, as, yeah, I mentioned that I'm really excited about that Merved, and then 30 months, I'm back on the podcast.
Seriously, that's what I was going to ask. I was like, okay, when are we going to come back and talk about it? So, okay, we've got it
I'll
right here.
You in for you better. The week of the 13th, 2027.
Perfect. You heard it here, folks.
2027.
Samuel said 2027 on this day. Oh, that's awesome. That's good.
Yeah, it was one of those... You know, working up to making our reserve program, basically, mm-hmm. is kind right. of the story behind that.
Okay.
And so we have this 2021 Tempranillo that's 100% French oak. It was kind of an expensive wine to manufacture, but it's just a gorgeous wine, and everybody loves it. And we've had a couple people now who, one of them from Spain, and then the other two are second generation from Spain, so their parents are from Spain, and all three of them were like, oh my god, this is like a Spanish Tempranillo, like, just, I can't even, you know. And so that's super cool for me to be like, okay, that was part of, you know, the argument for mom and dad, be like, okay, this is why it's worth spending a little bit more money on French oak,
right?
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
because you have this response to it. People just, it's just with certain things, it's just, you, there's just nothing like it.
No, that's awesome.
And so then, you know, that basically allowed me to convince them, hey, let's make this reserve program. and then we can justify saying, you know, hey, it's our reserve program. It's got an extra 10 months. It's got nice, really nice oak on it.
Yeah.
And these are beautiful wines that were, you know, have a lot of, you know, years of planning. That's why they're worth $50 or more, you know.
Right. Well,
but again, you know, going back to trying, you know, developing that relationship with exactly. your consumers where they understand why those bottles are that. They're not just looking at an $85 price tag and going, okay, that's because it's $85, it must be $85 good.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Well, I think that's the thing. I think you're right. I think the consumer sees, you know, the price tag and they go, oh, well, this is going to be. But reality, people don't see the behind the scenes of things. And I think that's what's important about it. And such a cool and valuable lesson to, like, really expand on, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it's not just wine that's like that, right? There's other goods that... Well, just because it's expensive doesn't mean, I mean, you know, see it all the time, designer clothes and stuff like that. It's like, again, I mean, not to say that those don't have a certain level of quality to them. It's just, where's the point of diminishing returns?
Exactly.
Know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
Oh, that's... yeah. I totally agree with you on that.
Well, we did talk a little bit, kind of, we talked about history, like I said, process, you know, we asked what you were most proud of, kind of behind the scenes. You talked a little bit about what your typical day kind of looks like. And then kind of just now going into the tasting room or a guest experience, what kind of experience do you want your guests to have when they come and visit the winery?
Yeah, I mean, it kind of comes full circle with that tasting room experience, right? Where when somebody comes in, we want them to feel like that it's warm and it's inviting, that they can bring their family, that they can be comfortable, that it's somewhere that, you know, if there's someone who likes to have a glass of wine and check their emails and on a Friday afternoon or something like that. Or there's somebody who, you know, has their kids, but, you know, they want their kids to be doing something, but they want to be able to enjoy a glass of wine while they do that, you know, and that kind of stuff. We want there to be, you know, a variety of experiences based on what people are looking for.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that we offer, you know, there's certainly periods of time that we are busy, but most of the time it's pretty low key.
Yeah.
And and I think that's what a lot of people really enjoy about it, is that they can come in there on a Thursday at 2:00 and then it's not packed, and they can have a chat, you know, chat with me about what's coming up and what, you know, what events are we doing, or what are we excited about in the vineyard this year, how are the vines looking and things like that, and develop that personal relationship.
Yeah.
So that when, you know, you taste that wine, you understand, like, oh, you know, I know the guy who does the management on, you know, does all the work and makes all these decisions. And
stuff. Yeah.
It's just that much more personal.
Yeah. No, right. That's awesome.
Well, you know, and if we did come and see you, you know, what would be, or I guess what would really anyone as advice would you give someone who's maybe new to wine and visiting the tasting room for the first time? You know, where should someone start? Where are they? What are they going to be experiencing in the wine aspect?
Yeah, so we always encourage someone who hasn't been in before to try one of our flights.
Mm-hmm.
Our flights are just the best way to get kind of a curated set of wines that are going to kind of showcase what we do, and hopefully some of the points that a newer member to our family would look for.
Right.
Awesome.
And you guys...
or, you know, whether that be someone who's really experienced or someone who's new to wine altogether, that remains true.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
And you guys just opened up your new location off of First Avenue in Kennewick. How has that been?
Yeah. So we just opened that up November of last year. So it's just a little under 6 months now.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's been great for us. It's just been such a, I don't know, just good luck, I guess. Just very serendipitous that we even were able to get in there. It was just hit us just right.
Right.
It's kind of a funny thing. The space was recently vacated and had been bought and sold, I think, a couple times. And so it had kind of fallen off of people's radar as far as, like, commercial realtors had gone.
Okay. Yeah.
And so mom just was walking. She got turned around downtown, made a left, and she should have made a right or something.
Hey.
And Yeah, and saw that there was retail spaces and that they looked vacant, and so she pulled over and was looking in them, and the one next door had recently sold. So the person who had, it was like coming soon or whatever in the windows. And so then the one next door cupped the glass or whatever and like wrote down the number and called it, and they were just immediately responsive, really excited to have us there. So
That's
it was
awesome.
kind
That's
of
awesome.
it's not been without its trials, of course,
Yeah.
as is any ownership, but no, it's been for us. We really love
Yeah.
the location. It seems like our neighbors are super friendly. Seems like all of us are really eager to have the downtown space not only do well, but continue to do well and expand. So
Right. Well, the
that's really
downtown
positive.
area of Kennewick, it's vast, it's growing, ever so, I wouldn't say slowly, but it's growing. And I think it was a perfect move for you and your team to go there. It's a great spot.
Yeah, we totally agree. We had looked into the wine village down there, right off of Columbia Drive, but it just there just wasn't so much room for us, if
Okay.
that makes sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And it just that space had it comes with its own set of problems and stuff too. And so we had tried to get in there, but it's kind of like a
Oh, okay.
bid program, I guess, the way that they run it. And so you kind of make a bid for like what you're gonna do, or you like submit a business plan or something like that. And I don't know. I can't remember exactly how it worked.
Right.
But it was kind of this whole process. And it was just kind of really rigorous. And then we wound up not getting it. And so we were just kind of like, yeah, fine. So we just spent our time in the market and grew our base and grew our wine club, and then this opportunity came up, again, not that far from the artisan wine village down there, but
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it sets you apart too, especially with
right,
First
exactly.
Avenue. It's right on the main road. So anyone that's coming, either from Fourth or let alone Garfield, or even Washington Street, you have the
Right.
perfect location, that's not going to be too close to, I don't want to call it competitors, but different types of wineries that are in the area, but it's there enough where you're gonna get that attraction, and I definitely think it's a smart area.
Well,
Well, thank
absolutely.
you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like to sugarcoat it a little bit, right? Like we're pioneers. We're the first winery in downtown Kennewick, right?
Hey, you
Yay.
keep doing that. That's
Yeah, pioneering.
that's
That's right.
awesome.
Yeah. So, but no, I think that was, that's part of it too. You're exactly right. Is there was so much focus on the artisan village down there.
Yeah,
And
right,
so,
so
when
much.
wineries go looking for a place to be, it's like almost like that's the place they look, and then they just throw their hands up and go, well, there's nowhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I
And
think
so, we're
it's.
like, well, we're just gonna bide our time.
No, that's. I think it's a great location, easily accessible right there, and I just think it's. Yeah, I'm excited for you guys, like I said. So,
Thank you.
yeah, leading into that, I guess then, my next question is, what kind of are you looking forward in the future, and goals that you may have?
Yeah, so we kind of want to try to feel out exactly the kind of economics, I guess, of the whole winery thing. Right now, we're still growing, mostly just growing our knowledge and trying to grow our portfolio.
Yeah.
With that, trying to learn as much as we can from other friends and I guess coworkers essentially in the industry, and because it's certainly, I would say, dubious. There's a lot of pitfalls in wine ownership
Yeah.
that we've found, and it's they're scary. I'm not gonna lie. There's some real risk involved with a lot of this stuff.
Oh
And
yeah.
Oh
you
yeah.
know, you're deferring getting your best quality product for 7 years, most likely.
Right.
And so, you know, we planted first in 2017, and so our back block is just now becoming mature. So from that to, you know, the amount of land that it requires and the amount of, you know, you have to have warehouse space to store product and things
Yeah.
like that. And so there's a lot of these kind of pitfalls that comes with winery ownership. And we're just trying to be cautious.
Yeah.
We take for growth.
Absolutely.
So initially we had planned to purchase more vineyard property, but now that's kind of taken a back seat as the market kind of reels right now from just the current economic climate.
Yeah. Well, and you,
So,
I
you know,
mean,
that being said, eventually we might want to hopefully put a tasting room out in our production facility.
okay.
That's
Yeah.
certainly a long-term goal. Two locations is nice, especially when it would be really nice to have a space that we could bring a caterer or,
Oh, yeah.
you know, things like that, and have some prep space.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to do a vineyard tour, that we have a space that we can start and end at, that people can purchase wine if they need to, and things like that. That's not kind of in a corner of our production space and kind of crammed in somewhere, you know. So
Yeah.
that's one goal, is that, but neighbors get really prickly when you talk about selling wine in rural area, so.
Right. Well, and you did mention, you know, kind of the challenges, but I guess what were some of the challenges that really were occurring when you're trying to get the winery off the ground and into where it's at this point?
Yeah, there's just a ton of red tape. It's just bureaucracy and levels
That's
of archaic
Oh, yeah.
laws that are just prohibition era. I mean,
Wow,
that's what
yeah.
these laws are. They're prohibition era. They were written in the 1920s, and then instead of, you know, doing properly and taking them apart and, you know, piece by piece and rewriting the legend, they just kind of crossed certain parts of it. And so it just kind of doesn't make sense in a lot of settings.
Yeah.
And, you know, granted, I'm not a lawyer or anything like that, but there's certain parts of it that just do not make sense. And most of it is just, again, because we have vestiges of where, you know, you have these officers that are kind of empowered by these weird bureaucratic, you know, like things like that, and then they switch you out of ATF and now you're TTB, and then you're dealing with this department at the federal level, and then you're dealing with this department at the state level, and they can't with
Wow.
each other at all. So you have to file a lot of doing these things, and it's like, well, I was already asked that. And they're like, yeah, well, we didn't get an answer from you. And then you come to find out, you're like, oh, right, because the state asked me that. I responded to them. I didn't respond to the guy at the Fed. So it's just kind of this whole, you know, double Dutch.
Yeah,
Yeah.
going through a whole
Just, you
like
know.
rigmarole of
Yeah.
back and forth.
Ups and downs and
Yeah.
emails. And then
Wow.
this person CC'd on this email, but then they get, then it gets dropped off. And so then they
Yeah.
don't, you know, it's like, yeah, it's.
Yeah.
So that's really challenging. And then, yeah, and so it's just, you know, conflicting kind of legal language too
Yeah.
has been kind of wacky for us.
Right.
We tried to get our property zoned or kind of rezoned, or look, not rezoned, but like get the language of how our zoning is and what's allowed and stuff like that redone, because essentially it says, you know, you're allowed to do this list of things on your property, right?
Right.
And so it's like, you know, you can do cattle and you can do orchards, and you can do this, and you can do that. And it says vineyards. Okay, so vineyards is approved, right? So vineyards, great, great. We're doing
Right.
vineyards. And then it also says later on in the in another legal paragraph in under our thing, able to do anything associated with processing or manufacturing of whatever you've grown on your site. Right. So it says that you're allowed to process and manufacture any of the goods that come off of your site on that site. Right. So that would insinuate, right, that we would be able to legally allowed to be manufacture wine,
Yeah,
right? Because we're
absolutely.
doing,
You would
right?
think. Yeah, you
But
would think.
no, because wine falls under a whole different
Oh,
subsection and a whole different clause.
jeez.
And so wineries is listed here, but not there.
Oh,
And then at the
wow.
state level,
Gosh.
the state says that you're allowed to have a winery. You're actually supposed to have a tasting room at your production facility. But then
Wow.
when we go to apply for a tasting room at our production facility, it has to be approved by all of our neighbors. And so if we have one neighbor that complains, then it gets the kibosh. And so that's kind of how it happened. And so
Wow.
we just decided not to fight it, and we were just
Yeah.
exhausted. And so anyway, that's kind of part of that whole thing. And long-term goal, yeah, eventually we're gonna have a bigger production facility, one that suits us better, and we'll have a little tasting room there that'll have kind of a slip space or a flex space that would allow us to do events and tours and the like.
At what point did you, I mean, you had to hang on to the reins with that
I
one,
know.
right? I mean, was there a point where you're like, I can't do this anymore? Like, what are we getting ourselves into? Is this worth it? Like,
Oh yeah, I have that conversation like every week,
yeah.
at least once.
Feel that one. That's why we drink the wine.
Yeah, right. Well, that's what it's like. Well, consolation prize, Ain't that the truth?
That
No,
would.
realistically, yeah, no, that it, it's it and that was right during COVID too.
Oh no,
Wow.
yeah,
So
that
we
would
were
be
dealing with
right.
that and COVID, trying to figure out
Oh.
like how are we going to deal with getting a retail space? Like, we're even if we had a retail space, we
Yep.
wouldn't be selling anything. So we're,
Exactly.
it was just,
Jeez. talk about the perfect
just,
time.
Really?
yeah, right. Well, I mean, it kind of did prevent us from pursuing retail spaces,
Okay.
which saved us in the long run.
Yeah.
That's true.
Basically, the way that we worked at mom and dad, kind of, they own the business, but they own the property, and they've kind of structured it in a real smart way where we had a we were able to kind of take some capital out, and so we had a bunch of capital that we were able to that we had planned on doing with this retail space and building a building and doing all these things, and then that all fell through because of COVID, and so we were able to turn around and reinvest that in some probably wiser places in the business.
Yeah, that's, oh man, so many just loopholes. That would, I, yeah, this is why you got the wine. So,
Thank
right.
God for wine.
That's right. That's right. That's why I own a wine business and not any other kind of business.
Seriously. Well, we know, yeah, talking about obviously the challenges and downs and all of that, but what's been the most rewarding for you in this journey so far?
Oh man, the whole process of winemaking for me is there's just nothing like it. It's so incredible to put that level of effort in for something that won't pay off for 4 years.
Right.
And when it does pay off at the end of that 4 years, just the bliss of that, like when I taste that the Cab Sauv, like that's why that's on my list, is that's because when I taste it, every time I taste it, I remember what went into it and everything that we did for it and what was going on so it's just the deferred kind of dopamine, I guess, of that, like, oh, we waited and we waited and we waited and we waited, and the anticipation is just, yeah, it just makes it just makes it so rewarding.
Oh yeah.
And that applies with the winemaking, and it also applies with the grapes, right? Too. Like we said, it takes 7 years for those vines to be at a level where you could say that it's a mature vineyard.
Yeah. No. This you know,
and so yeah.
That's awesome. I'm like I said, excited to see and watch your journey. And you know, obviously, all jokes aside, the loopholes and everything there, and literally, if it's reminds me of like you have those like if yes, then go here; if no, go here. I
right.
felt like you go through right, but
sure, type deal, yeah.
So it's just like it's great. I'm excited to see the journey, and you talk about that Cab Sauv, which was my favorite on when we were there. I looked to Dylan. I was like, "Oh, this is good."
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So of course we did get that bottle, but we do. It's like a perfect segue. You're great at transitions. It's like you know what we're about to do next, because we are going to pour a little bit of this. Can you tell us about this beautiful bottle, this beautiful wine?
Yeah. So that's our Cab Sauv. So that's got a really fun story. It's going to be, I'm going to get a little long winded here. So, you know, feel free
we
to.
We will sit back and we are good. We'll have some wine and go ahead.
This out, but, so, yeah, so I'll just, you know, run you through it. It's 100% Cab Sauv, comes off of White Bluffs, same vineyard as the Cab Sauv that we have in our Petit Verdot.
Okay.
So, different vineyard than our neighbor. We'll touch more on that later. So we get 2 tons of it, and it goes crushed and destemmed right away into our, we use egg-shaped fermenting vessels.
Okay.
So porous egg-shaped fermenting vessels. They're a porous polymer that allows oxygen through, similarly to how a wood would, like an oak tank would.
Okay.
So we get the fruit off of the vineyard, comes in, we crush and destem it. It gets all of its additions and everything that it, you know, gets turned into a big concoction. And then we let that cold soak on dry ice for about 36 hours.
Oh, cool.
So it usually comes off around somewhere in the afternoon, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. We're usually done with processing that 2 tons. And then I'll usually wait to inoculate it with the yeast until 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock the following day.
Okay.
Wow.
So that's pretty much what happened here. It was done at about 5 o'clock, and then I inoculated about 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock the following night.
Okay.
So then after that, it's pretty standard red wine stuff. It gets cap management, so we'll pump it over twice a day, for 2 weeks. And then we'll pump it over once a day for probably the next 4 or 5 days, usually about the 20-day mark, 21 days, usually right on the money with the yeast that we use and the size of batch that we have. I've got that pretty dialed in to about 3 weeks. And then the finished wine is not fully finished, but we're considering it finished at that point. The finished red wine goes, the wine gets drained off the bottom. It gets put into barrels, the skins and everything that's solid from the tank gets pressed. That remainder goes into a barrel as well. And then we will add our malic bacteria, which will convert the malic acid in the wine into lactic acid, like most red wine.
Okay.
And then from there, it sits for about another 4 weeks in a warm room in barrel. Then we'll rack it once and cool it down, add our sulfur, get it all nice and stabilized up, get the barrels topped up, and then it'll sit in our cellar for most of our reds, 22 months.
Wow.
So this one, 22 months. This Cab Sauv was on French and American oak for 22 months.
Wow.
Do you ever just sit and you're like, I'm impatient? I probably would just like stare. Do you just get that worry? Like, is this going to turn out? Am I doing it too long? Is it too short?
Oh yeah. All the time. Like,
okay.
So we have, So I mentioned our reserve program. We're just kind of easing into it. So we have the 21 Tempranillo, but then we actually this year we're going to release our first reserve. It's our going to be our reserve 2022 Reserve Merlot from Art's Vineyard on Red Mountain. And that wine, I did not like it at all.
Okay, wow.
I did not like it when it was done fermenting. I didn't like it when it was done with Malbec fermentation. I didn't like it. I probably liked it even less after it was done in Malbec fermentation and or Malbec conversion. And then I got it in barrels. And after about 5 months, which is when I usually try to test my barrels and see how my oak is integrating with the wine, tested about 5 months after secondary fermentation. I tasted it in the barrels and I liked it even less. At that point, I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what have I done? What have I done? This fruit was so expensive. Oh my God, it's on a really nice French oak barrel. What is going on? Why do I not like this? And then it hit like 17 months.
Okay.
And it was just a different wine.
So it's almost like trust the process. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Because I think at
totally.
five, if I would have checked it at 5 months, I probably would have been like, oh, crap. You know what I mean?
Trust the
Like stressed
process.
out,
Yeah.
probably wanted to dump it.
That's what I tell my
Yeah.
athletes. Trust the
But
process.
yeah, and then you catch yourself 17 months later and wow, you're thrilled and happy or happier, you know, with the wine that's being produced, which is super cool.
Yeah, it's why we do it, you know.
Yeah, no, I love that. Oh,
Because yeah, that wine. I mean, there. But I've had all kinds. You know, I mean, I'm very fortunate that I spent a number of years in the industry, just at different places, at different levels, at different sizes, and like that. And I got to see batches being made. You know, from the batch size that I'm at. You know. 3 to 5 barrels, all the way up to, you know, 80, 90, 120 barrel batches, you know.
Yeah.
So, and everything in between, and you learn something from all those processes, and you know, maybe not everything that you do or everything that you learn from humongous batches would apply to small batches, but you know, it's gonna learn, you know, it's gonna help you learn how all the pieces fit together in that way. And in that regard, I'm very fortunate. Then I can just trust the process because I'm like I, and then with that, when you're learning, oh, maybe I need to just not make such rash judgments, right?
Yeah.
Then you learn like, okay, I need to take into account that this is only 5 months old. I know how all the other wines that I've tasted at 5 months behave. Is this maybe still a problem or is it okay? And that's, you
Yeah.
know, and so because that's just experience, right? And so that's.
Yep.
You know, you just have to have that experience. And there's, you know, it's winemaking is so fickle with that because, again, because you do have these 4-year payoffs. And if you're someone that, you know, you may not necessarily be able to have the opportunity to test or taste your wines
Yeah.
that you've made at that 4-year mark, right? Like you just by nature of like, oh, you were winemaker here, you're assistant winemaker there, and then you bounced around from here to there to there to here. And you know, yeah, you might be able to go buy one of your bottles off of a shelf or something like that. But you know, who knows how that's been stored
Yeah.
or you know, things like that. So but again, very fortunate to be able to
Yeah.
learn on this estate fruit as well, because not only do I learn how the vines grow up and how what to look for as a young vineyard matures, but then also solidifying the concepts that I've learned back in school and
Yep.
what I've gained in the industry as well, with like, oh, this is why these vines aren't mature for 7 years.
Yeah. No, that's so, I
So.
love that. That's interesting and just learning more. And I'm sure, you know, you're learning more each and every day. And I mean, I can tell that just you talking about it, you just are so passionate and love what you do. And so that's just, of course, just adds to it, right? And so but yeah, with your family and working alongside of that, how has it been working with your family, with, you know, the winery and everything else and, you know, the family roles? How has it been doing this together?
Oh yeah, it's been challenging. I mean,
I know,
not
I
gonna
got
lie.
family, so you're good.
Family,
I know.
yeah, family business is challenging.
Yep.
There's no two ways about it. You can't quit at the end of the day. I
Yep.
mean, you
Yep.
can, I guess,
Yeah.
but yeah, it's one of those things where, yeah, it affects your fight or flight a little differently than a lot of other things do. But no, it's good. I think it's for me the challenge is worth it.
Yeah.
It has forced me to learn patience. It has forced me to reinforce better communication
Yeah.
methods, things like that. It's stuff that's still really important and
Yeah.
forces you to push through some of the knee-jerk reactions that you might have, which is good.
Absolutely,
I
yeah.
love it,
Yeah.
and it's been fun. I mean, it's super fun that it's a good environment that, well, it's always like the red flag, like, oh, when you work here, you're family. But like, I
Yeah.
mean, in the best way,
Yeah.
in the best way.
Yeah.
It's a give and take, and most of the time I feel like it gives more than it takes. So,
Good. Yeah, yeah. Family can definitely be challenging, let alone working with your family
No kidding. Right.
definitely can be challenging. So, I get it. But so excited for you and just your family and, what you're doing in the community. Dylan and I always talk about obviously why we do this is to get people's names, obviously being in the community, getting people's names out there, and just because we love wine and want to always support those, you guys, of course. So, connecting with the community, how has the local area community responded to your winery?
Great question. We've had an extremely, I don't know, boisterous, resounding response in the community, it seems.
Good.
Not quite. So I think our club membership is up about 60%, 65% since
Okay.
we moved into the space there
Okay.
on First Avenue.
Wow.
And majority, 75, 85% within 2, 3 blocks a mile. Really good. It seems like the community was looking, it seems like they're eager to see new stuff. It seems like they're eager to see us succeed.
Yeah.
It seems like the not only the residents, the consumers, but also the other businesses that are on that First Avenue strip have really had a great response to us. And we tend to, we try to be, proactive and reach out to people and introduce ourselves and say, hey, this is what we're about, and we're just mellow, we're not trying to rain on anybody's parade
Yeah.
or bring the feds in or nothing,
Yeah,
so
no.
but yeah, so it's good to have that, and just fortunate that dad is just such an extrovert. He just goes
Yeah.
around and
Oh.
meets people, and yeah, so
That's awesome.
but yeah, the community response
Good.
has been very, very
Oh,
positive.
good.
yeah
Good.
yeah we've or been really su successful with organizing events with other vendors and other business owners, and it seems like we'll ask something of, the Downtown Kennewick Partnership, or we'll reach out to some other organization and ask for something, and it seems like, some other business is either already asked that or is asking something that's, going to help that, facilitate that or something like that. And so it's been pretty good with, like, we're all kind of on the same page
Yeah,
as
that's
far as how we want to see this move forward and how we want to see the downtown continue to develop, because, Kennewick Avenue is beautiful. That's super nice
Yeah,
and
no kidding.
walkable there, and but a lot of those businesses are just cornerstones. They've just been there forever, and so it's cool that that's super nice that we have that, and it's a really beautiful downtown space. But we would like to see something similar happen to First. We really would. We'd like to see them slow traffic down and maybe do some diagonal parking with one of those four lanes or something
That would
like
be
that. There's
awesome.
something on the books for it, I hear, but again, that's at a snail's pace, it seems. But anyway, that's, growth in the future.
Good.
We do
Awesome.
intend to stay at the First Avenue location as long as we can. But yeah, as far as grow, that would be, and again, everybody on that strip there agrees that that would benefit us. People treat that First Avenue strip as though it's 30 the whole way, even though it's 25, and we would certainly benefit from a slowed traffic structure.
Yeah, no, I can totally see that. And when you, well, when we walked into the tasting room, you guys had, it was, correct me if I'm wrong, but local artwork, is that correct? Hanging up on the walls?
Yes. So we partnered with Artworks Northwest, who is just kind of a local sourcing, I guess, co-op maybe, I think is it maybe what they are? I don't know, but they're an organization that of local artists that kind of work together to display people, that their members art. And so I forget how mom got in contact with them. But basically how it works is they come in, they take a look at your space, they figure out, they call up some artists who they think has pieces that would look good in your space,
Oh, wow.
and then they bring it in, and they will rotate. I think they'll do whichever you prefer. They'll rotate either every 3 months or every 6 months. I could be wrong on that, but I know they rotate in and out regardless. And so then, yeah, they'll bring artists in, and they'll, like sometimes, like we just recently had a couple artists move their stuff out. So we're in the process of getting another artist to be brought in. So they kind of rotate through, which is great for us. Keeps
Yeah.
keeps our wall space filled. It helps bring attention to local artists and helps, helps us to kind of give the community space to do their thing, and especially a space that we're not really using. So it's really a win-win for us.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's a win-win for not only you, but even the local artists, which I think is a really cool opportunity for everyone involved.
Totally.
But
Totally. And then as it gets, as more people are interested, there's more reason for artists to sign up,
yeah,
right? So
exactly.
if it's like, oh, well, if it's two or three shops, that's one thing. But if it's like, oh, we've got 30 shops that we rotate art through, and then it's like, then you have artists that are like, oh, cool. Well, then yeah, then my art will get some exposure. So.
Right. Now, do you guys, I mean, of course, we're about a quarter of the way through the year, but do you see any events or anything planned for the rest of the year, with either events or maybe some experiences?
Yeah, so on the horizon for the summer, we kind of have, so every first Saturday we're doing this, partnering with the art gallery who's also on First Avenue, Charles Francis Reproductions, and he's going to, or he already has, we actually did one this month, but he's organizing these basically it's a kind of like an art walk,
Oh,
where we
cool.
just have artists. He brings in a bunch of local artists, artisans. There's kind of, there's a gambit. There's a couple of woodworkers. There's a guy who does metal stuff, and people doing oils, people doing pastels, people doing, all kinds of different mediums. But he brings them in, and basically we offered our space to host a couple of them because we're right next door to each other. And so basically there's our space, there's his space, and then there's an alleyway in between our buildings.
Okay.
And that space, we put tent covers in, the big semi-permanent tents for, venues, barbecues and whatnot. But we put a couple of those out there. He puts food up. We have, like 15 artists or a dozen artists or so, and then they just kind of all display their stuff and just kind of rock it. So that's what we've been doing this summer. We've organized that first Saturday of every month for the next 3 months, I believe. And then we have our Summerfest is going to be in June, I think the second week of June. I don't know if there's a hard date set for that yet, but we're going to do the Summerfest where we basically kind of do a barrel tasting. We let everybody come hang out. We do live music. We'll do some food. Get everybody familiar with some of the wines that we're going to be releasing in the fall, during the fall release. And then moving past that, we'll have our fall release in the fall, obviously. And then we usually have a Christmas party sometime in the middle of December.
Okay. There you go.
So yeah, kind of try to plan things out in advance, but you know, just the three of us, it can get
tricky for sure. Well, and of course, Jordan and I, being club members, club time. So can you tell us a little bit about club experience and maybe the future of that?
So as we grow our club membership, basically we want to start offering some more, I guess, extravagant events, if you will. And that being things, you know, where we can maybe bring in, you know, like a taco truck or some catering or something like that. And then, you know, have multiple live artists and, you know, make more of a bash of it. But basically club members would benefit and you get cheap tickets for those. So that would be, you know, basically this year we're doing Summerfest is kind of light. We're just kind of trying to feel the space out, figure out if it's something that club members want, first of all, and also if it's something that logistically makes sense for us to do versus maybe we do a pop-up event in town or something like that instead of doing it out at the Vineyard. But anyway, we're trying to figure this whole thing out. But the Summerfest is kind of going to be something that we do that's a little bit different because basically for us, it just logistically doesn't work out to do big spring and fall release parties. We're just too busy that time of year.
Yeah. For sure.
You know, so it kind of comes down to, well, normally a winery would do a spring release right after they've bottled their spring wines. And it's like, well, yeah, but we're busy bottling our spring wines. On top of that, then we're busy cleaning up after bottling our spring wines, and we're trying to get things spooled up in the vineyards. And so, yeah, it just becomes pretty hectic to do any kind of event. Plus, our club membership is now, frankly, too large to fit in the tasting room. So, which is a good thing. It's a great thing. I love it. But it basically makes it so, you know, can't really do a spring release party at the tasting room anymore.
Okay.
And so it would have to be, you know, and then it becomes organizing the vineyard. And honestly, vineyard's great and all, but it's a working vineyard and it looks like hell in the spring. Like, oh, nothing sure. looks good. The, yeah, well, yeah. the grass is all dead and yeah. dry. It's frankly chilly outside.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a good time to be outside in, you know, in March. So no. or April for that matter.
Shoot,
even.
No.
Basically we've kind of settled on this. We're gonna just do this big summer fest.
And no, that's awesome. I think that's fun. Honestly, just because you know, not a lot of people do that. Mm-hmm. And then just sometimes like other places, you know, you're like, I can't do that on this day or this is kind of, so I think the summertime is honestly perfect. Like, yep. I think that's going to be big. I'm excited.
Let's have fun. Let's get together. Yeah. Let's do it.
Right. And then again, you know, like I think, you know, we'll probably run it to where, you know, kids get in free and something like that. And so, you know, brings it back to being, trying to be family friendly and having be summer helps with that too, because then the kids are usually off, and so that kind of thing.
No, that's great.
I think,
and then yeah,
too.
Of course, like I said too, we're definitely going to be offering some barrel tastings and stuff like that, so you'll get to taste through some pretty cool, you know, taste out of some barrels, some stuff that's not finished, some stuff that's on its way to being finished, and then some stuff that's about to be bottled.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see the difference. So that's kind of something that we like to do too. We like to show off our cute little micro winery and all of our toys and our stainless machines and things. And yeah. So
no, that'd be cool. Show off the stuff.
But then, yeah, I think we'll probably still try to do a Christmas party too, but we'll see.
Yeah.
That's far enough away where I'm choosing not to think about it
yep,
right now.
Don't, because then your brain just hurts. That's what mine does. I'm like, I can't even think of next week, so I'm trying to rein it in.
But yeah. I mean, it just gets out of hand.
Yeah.
Oh true. Yeah. No yeah. kidding.
So.
Well, and I think you are putting in a cool perspective. You know what I mean? Not a lot of wineries are going to allow their members to try something that's, you know, still in the barrel and still in production. And I think that's a cool experience. And you don't see very often a family oriented club release or a club party. And I think that's such a smart market, you know, especially for the families that do have kids. You know, they can come in and you have future wine drinkers.
Absolutely. There. I mean, my kids are. They've already started.
Yeah, right. You have those, like, the opportunity where you're going to build and grow, and they're going to remember, oh, I had such a great time at Four Whistles. Like,
yeah,
let's get back. You know, I remember that time mom and I went to Four Whistles, right? And I think that's what a lot of wineries are missing nowadays. Yeah. And I think you're on the right track.
You guys are,
not to, like, put a pun in it, but.
Hey, there it is.
I might have done a pun in the beginning when we did the introduction, and I.
the more we drink, the more that we get punny, so it's fun.
Great. No.
But.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with our Summerfest, we always have like croquet set up.
Oh, cool.
And you know, cornhole and ladder ball. And,
oh, yeah. All the fun yard games. Yeah. No, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's that. And I think as far as other club benefits go, it's just generally like cool discounts on stuff. And as club members to... we always reserve, at least of our reds. Typically, we don't reserve any rosé or any of our dry white wines. But most of our reds, we reserve 10 cases, and we throw them in the library just to make sure that club members kind of have final call on those wines.
Oh, cool.
That's super cool.
That's awesome. Yeah. No, that's great.
Well, Sam, it's been... an absolute pleasure having you on the podcast. I've truthfully really have enjoyed every moment that I've been able to spend with you, Phil and Jane, just at either the tasting room or just in general. I mean, it's been a lot of fun. And so we appreciate your time.
Absolutely.
We have one final question for you if you're ready for it. And it's, could describe your winery's future in three words, what would it be and why?
Three words.
I know. No pressure.
I know, right? Save the best for last.
Dylan, how dare you?
Or I guess the hardest for last, maybe.
Three words, huh? See, I'm blabbermouth, and now you've stumped me with one
question.
You're
good. I know. Doesn't have
probably
to be three
have
words.
To still. Say...
I know. I say three words, but it doesn't have to be three words. Absolutely not.
Always moving forward.
Always moving forward. I love that.
Actually, because while you do have to try to look at what you've done in the past for winemaking, once you've made a decision, most of the time, there's no going back. You just gotta move forward. Yeah.
Right.
No, that's good.
What can I do now?
Yeah.
I can't then, right now.
Yeah.
I can only do something now.
Yes, right. That's good.
That's good. That's that.
Well, no, I think
keep
that's
that
awesome.
Tagline. Make shirts. Let's get some merch. Four whistles. Always moving forward.
Always moving forward. Yeah. So down. I would buy a sweatshirt with that any day.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's iconic.
Big locomotive train.
Yes.
On the
yes. Let's go right now. That's awesome.
100%.
Oh,
we're
that's
totally
good.
Down for that.
No. Well, thank yeah. you so well, much, as Dylan said, for, you know, joining us. We are so excited just to, like we said, just to keep supporting you, getting to know you guys, and sharing this podcast. I'm excited. Yeah.
I'm excited to come hang out
awesome.
On the vineyard with you. Yeah. I keep telling Jordan.
Dude, yeah, read my mind. I was just going to say, please come up to the vineyard. We'll show you around.
Okay. I'm going to take you up on
like,
it.
Definitely wait like a...
You still there?
I'm being a little shy right now. So.
What were you saying? I'm sorry, you cut out just a little bit.
Oh, I said, yeah, definitely to the vineyard. You read my mind.
For sure.
Yes, definitely. But yeah, like a couple more weeks where, because the vines are just dormancy right now, so they're not quite green.
Yeah,
that's fine. I'll send you my contact, like personal contact. And we'll get together for yeah. sure.
Cool. Guys.
Well, thank you so much. I feel like he should close us out because I always do the closing, but I should pass the baton.
Oh,
also, this is just for my, we don't have to put this in the podcast, so it's fine. But I think I talked to your mom. Did you, or were you a thrower? Did you do track and throw?
Oh yeah, I was a thrower. Yeah.
Okay, me too. And I coach awesome. Throws at I coach a high school, Pasco High School. So I was a thrower cool. And then I
coach
and
now
I coach it. So that was just
yeah,
my
I was a discus thrower.
Okay. Nice. I did shot and then in I did hammer and I did a little bit of discus.
Nice.
Yeah. So
I remember you guys.
I did shot. I mean, because we had to do shot.
Yeah.
You were a thrower, you did shot.
It's
but...
true. It's true.
I was never any good at it. I mean, you've seen my frame. So.
And I was a shot putter and discus was that. But I love coaching discus because just the mechanics wise, I love all of that.
Yeah, discus was so much
yes,
fun for me.
It's fun. So
okay. It's always why I did it. I was never any good anyway, but I was definitely better at discus than I was at shot.
Oh, yeah. So
someone's
going
to have to show
other.
Me because I've never done it. Cool. You want to do it?
Show you?
I have no, a discus and a shot
oh,
put.
Come oh, on.
We're going to get together.
Come on. Come down to my, yeah. You
we're
can come
so
anytime. I'm always at practice coaching those kids. So I always like to show them up what's up to sometimes, though. Be like,
well,
hey.
I might actually take you up on that.
Literally.
Give me something to do. Throw that discus again.
Literally.
Oh,
come down.
Cool.
We just got done with our big, huge Pasco invite. So
nice.
We're open. So yeah, anytime I'm
hell
down
yeah.
there. I've got the stadium. So, and it's just fun. But I like to throw and show them. I'd be like, if I can do this, you guys can do this. I'm old. And my
it's
knees.
Been, yeah,
hurt.
It's been. Yeah, 15 years
yep,
since I've
say,
thrown.
Hey, come on. It'll be fun. I love it. I love throwing. I have always my returners come back too, and they'll come and throw and then help, you know, coach the kids. So, yeah, I would love it. So
cool.
So, anyway,
cool.
So on the outro, what I always say is, and why am I blanking? Oh my gosh, I just got nervous. I'm blanking. What do I say, Dylan? I'm actually forgetting right now. And I've not only had a little bit of
well,
wine,
you said,
to be fair.
You say cheers, my friends.
Oh, yeah. That's why I always say. And So what I say is, until next time, cheers, my friends. And then we say cheers. So if you want to say that, until next time, cheers, my friends, then well, I think we can add that at the end. I think it'd be good. Are you
oh,
up?
Oh, just me? Or
yeah,
like
just
a,
you.
Do...
Just you. I think
we'll
you'll
say
be great.
Cheers at the end.
I mean, we'll say cheers I'll with sure. you. We'll say cheers at the end right, with you. But cool. yeah, you say that part.
Well, then, in that case, until next time, cheers, my friends.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Perfect. That was great. Thank you so much. That's
cool.
going to be a good
all
one.
All right, guys. Well, yeah, this is a real pleasure.
Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
Seriously, we really
yeah,
appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we'll see.